Blog Talk Radio.
You can go home now. We have already taken out the garbage.
I wanted to question them.
We have the answers we need.
I guess that means I have questions for you.
Goodbye, Captain America.
We need to talk. Maybe you just lop off the head of every newcomer who hits town.
If we did that, you wouldn't have yours.
But those Nazis were here for a reason.
Yes. To steal our vibranium. The mineral that can only be found here, in Wakanda. Hitler needs it for the next generation of their missile systems. As do you.
These are dangerous times. You need to choose a side.
We have our own. We take our borders very seriously, and you have crossed ours.
Now look here.
Mistake.
Okay, buddy. I've just about had it. You're just plain rude.
Move back. I've been following your fledgling career, Steve Rogers.
How did you know my name?
I think in time, you will represent to your nation what the Black Panther represents to Wakanda. And that is a good thing. But today, I must teach you a lesson.
Faster than a speeding bullet! More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Time to teach you a lesson. Folks, welcome to the Grindhouse edition of Afro Radio and the Comic Shop. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. 2 hours of information, fun, facts, nerdcore, urban alternative, you name it, we got it. Of course, we have Daryl B. in attendance, as well as the great Captain Tiberius Kirk. Folks, we got to go to a quick nerdcore groove first, about a minute and a half. When we get back, we have a lot to discuss. It appears that Ant-Man, the film, has been moved up about three and a half months. For reasons unknown, we will unpack that. There's just so much information. Why did DC decide to have a contest to draw Harley Quinn in suicide poses? Very interesting. We got to discuss that. So, without further ado, let's go to, again, a quick nerdcore groove, and we'll discuss. This is, well, you know, Underdog, the Underdog theme by the Butthole Surfers. What a name, Butthole Surfers. We'll be right back. Oh, about a minute and a half.
Here, break all the nation's fear.
whatever that's. Again, the Butthole Surfers. What a name. The underdog theme, folks. All right, folks, let's just get into it. Again, this is the Comic Shop, the Grindhouse Edition. Let's get to it. First up, of course, there is the Captain. Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
This is the Black Panther.
That might be a cool code name, actually. And then, of course, there's Daryl B., the Invincible Daryl.
Thank you, network television, or should I say cable television. The last couple of weeks between the Continuum season finale, between Rewind, between Legend of Korra, you know what? I'm ready. And coming up, I got Bones and I got Sleepy Hollow coming up this week. I'm feeling good.
Yeah, this seems to be almost too much, Daryl, dare I say. A lot of those things you mentioned, I was deeply in Continuum, Daryl, but I'm out of it now. I know I'm about maybe 7 episodes behind, so I've got to catch up on Continuum. There's so many things being thrown at us now. Sleepy Hollow, like you said, Sleepy Hollow is coming up this Monday. Bones, I mean,
yes.
Almost too much. You know, Orange is the New Black. Too much stuff.
And we also get Arsenio back, which you guys are going to touch on in the next show. And Totally Biased got a new weeknight skit, a new weeknight slate. Four days during the week, Monday to Thursday. And why is this apropos, folks? He interviewed Laverne Cox from Orange is the New Black and Sarah Silverman this week. Two interviews that I say are must watch. Just must watch because they touch upon a lot of stuff about appearances and stereotypes that, you know, you're not going to get from Jay Leno. You're not going to get from Jimmy Fallon. Hell, you're not even going to get on Arsenio. There's stuff to make you think. But let's get started. I got my boxing gloves on, and DC and Warner Brothers, you did it again. I can't believe it, but let's do this. Ding!
So you open up a door about Arsenio because I do want to talk about it. You're welcome to stop by when we talk about it in the next segment, the next show at 7 p.m. because I was a big fan of Arsenio, and I still like him, but he's going to have to do something. I'm going to just mention this and then we'll get into it. This is still pop culture stuff. Arsenio, I started realizing what Arsenio represents, that he doesn't use cue cards, that he kind of has an inside track when he talks to people, which makes it very interesting when he gets into an interview. Something I didn't notice before, but I notice now. You know, Jimmy Fallon, all these other guys, love him or hate him. I like some of these guys. I like Jimmy Fallon especially, and Jimmy Kimmel. But they rely on cue cards. They're not as smooth as Arsenio, believe it or not. Arsenio does not use cue cards. He just has a conversation, kind of sort of like what the Afro Nerd does. But he's got the rap community there like he did last time. This is 20 years past now. He needs to get to Afropunk, to Black Rock, just because Arsenio did a lot to bolster hip-hop in the 90s. I don't know if he gets the credit for that, but he was the one of the main focal points that really elevate hip-hop to a larger audience. This time around, leave these minstrels alone. Go towards the Afropunk people. Go towards the Black Rock people to help them out like he helped out Ice Cube and all those cats 20 years ago. What are your thoughts on that? And then we'll move along.
You know, that's a good point, but he takes huge steps next week. I believe next week he has Erykah Badu on. Next week he has Janelle Monáe on. Or in the next 2 weeks he has both of those artists on. That's a big step. Now let's see, like I said, let's see him build upon it. Right now, the guy that's been putting out a lot of alternative acts, not just black, not just white, not just Asian, but alternative acts from all over, has been Jimmy Fallon. Let's see if Arsenio can do the same, you know? Because you get a lot of different stuff from Jimmy Fallon that you don't get on regular with regular talk shows late night. So let's see. And the question is, can the black community tolerate a lot of different acts? You know what my bugaboo is. We all say we want it, but in the end, what do you go back and see? You go back to the same old tired cliches, the same old shtick. Let's see if the black community wants that.
You make a point. You know, Theophilus London, those cats that were at Afropunk. I mean, these guys, you know, Nicki Lynette, there's a lot. I could go down the line. I know you and I know this music. I'm going to write a letter, believe it or not, to Arsenio and tell him, hey, if you know, who knows if he'll get it, if it gets to him, but you'd be surprised. I'm going to tell him, listen, you did so much for the hip-hop thing, but now, you know, hip-hop is not where it was when he was doing it. His last show, which is on YouTube, you will see all these acts, and it shows you how diverse hip-hop was in the early 90s. This is not the same landmark right now, or not the same scheme anymore. It's a different thing going on. He needs to cut Meek Mill and those guys, cut those guys, Mac Miller, cut those guys alone, get to the new stuff, just to be, if you're going to be hip. This whole thing is being hip. If you're going to be hip, be hip. All right, enough said. Captain, what are your thoughts, and then we'll go on.
Well, I'll save my thoughts till, you know, the next segment due to time constraints, but let's get into this.
This is true.
You know, let's go.
All right. On occasion, you know. All right, folks, again, don't be confused. This is the Comic Shop. Daryl, first up, let's talk about this Ant-Man film. Heavily touted. I have my issues with it because I thought there should have been a tie-in to this Age of Ultron thing. And last time we spoke, I was under the impression that it was in November of 2015 or 2014? 2015, I think.
2015.
So now it's been pushed up. Disney's pushing it up to July 31st. There's a write-up on this from the Motley Fool, which is, of course, a financial website. So what are your thoughts as to why Disney did this? With all of that, it's going to be a glut of things at that time. So why do you think they did this?
Hey, I think it's a mistake. Honestly, like I said, I was under the impression that it would be in February, like a setup, an appetizer to lead you into Avengers for that spring summer season. You know, to whet the people's appetites and then whoop, just go right into it. Reason why is, after Avengers Age of Ultron, we're all going to be a little Avengers out by then, you know. So a quick turnaround and have this movie just 1-2 months later doesn't really make sense to me, because you kind of need the build, you know, to support a movie like this, you know. I just look at it this way, and people out there, if you don't know baseball, I'll keep this brief, okay? You don't put on a fast runner, like slash batter, right after a home run hitter. You put him before the home run hitter, because if he gets on base, the home run hitter freaking hits the home run, you get two runs instead of one, okay? You put the Hank Pym movie on before the Avengers 2 movie. People who aren't even interested in Hank Pym will go see it just thinking, oh, well, Marvel always puts tie-ins and stuff. Oh, what could possibly be the tie-in for Age of Ultron? What could possibly be the lead? You know, I'm not really interested in Ant-Man, but I'll go and see the movie to see if there's a tie-in. You put it on after, you know, is that supposed to kick off to phase 3 and lead on to that? That's a long ways away, and we'll still be in the afterglow of Age of Ultron. I mean, that's how I'm thinking about it. Hey, Cap, you want this?
Well, what I think is happening at this given point, see, Marvel set up something very good, and it overachieved. You understand? Meaning which, let's say you were setting out to go to college, and then you were able to get, you were thinking, well, I was only going to be able to make junior college, and all of a sudden Yale calls, and you're accepted, you got a free ride. That's equivalent to what Marvel did with this whole setup. You know, that's what they did. But now what happens is, you see, the suit greed sets in, and it starts to turn into a money graph. Now, someone told me, this is what I heard. I'm not going to tell you exactly where. They want to get it to the point that they can drop a movie every 2.5 months. Now, I don't know how realistic that is, but this is what I was told. They want to get it to the point over there where they're dropping movies every 2.5 months. They want to run that streak. You know what that means? If that's the truth, I don't know. This is what someone told me.
That scream you heard was her wallet.
All right?
Yeah.
If that is the truth, now it turns into a big money grab, more so than what it already is. You set it up nice. We all know it's a money grab. But now you turn it directly into, let me just throw things at the wall and see what I can grab. And eventually, if you start doing that, if that is the case, you're going to mess up. There's going to be garbage that goes up on the wall. That's all. That's all I'm saying. That's all. It looks a little funny. They have a nice thing set up the way they're doing it. They need to stick to it. You know, if it's not broke, What are you trying to fix it for, Marvel? Unless you're trying to get excessively greedy. That's all I'm saying.
One quick thing,
and you mentioned this. I think both of you mentioned this. The fact that Marvel already has set up this ingenious linkage plan, the fact that these movies kind of sort of have to be successful because in order for the audience to find out what happens next, and there's got because of their tie-ins. I mean, it is a genius kind of thing. The fact that the storylines and the characters are separate unto themselves, they're different characters, and yet there's a lineage between them means that Ant-Man. You had to see Ant-Man know what's going to happen in Avengers 2. You got to see Avengers 2 to see what's going to happen in the next Captain America or in Thor. I mean, that whole setup is genius planning.
Yep.
You have an audience that's not going to not want to see what happens next, because the next movie is going to be radically different than the one before because it's a different character. Yet, to get clues as to where we go, you got to see it. Now, what they're doing with this Ant-Man thing is confusing me because now, first of all, we don't know if it is going to be Hank Pym. There's been, three or four different Ant-Men? So we don't know if that's going to be.
Yeah, but Pym.
It's going, okay, if that's the case, all right. But then you have it after the Ultron movie. See, to me it would have made more sense for Pym to have Ant-Man. Obviously the movie's pretty much on track. You could have had Ant-Man lead into the Ultron movie. That would have been guaranteed money. Doing it backwards like that, and you're doing it backwards where there's all this other stuff going on. Now, let me read this quickly, and I'm going to go to a quick nerdcore groove. This is from the Motley Fool, as I said before, the noted financial website. It says, it's entitled, Why Disney Just Bumped Up This Marvel Film's Release. If you've enjoyed Walt Disney's bevy of Marvel-based comic book movies, so far you're going to love this. All right, well, on Monday, comics fans cheered after Disney announced it was moving the release date of Marvel Studios' Ant-Man up by 3 months to July 31st, 2015. Still, some investors worried that the move to an already crowded, busy summer season was a bad idea, especially considering it meant Ant-Man would potentially be cannibalizing sales from the fifth installment of Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, originally scheduled for a July 10th, 2015 debut. What's more, the new date also pits Ant-Man directly against the highly anticipated July 17th release date of Man of Steel 2, also my birthday, which is interesting, for which blockbuster status already seems a foregone conclusion given that the first film brought in a whopping $661 million in gross box office receipts worldwide. That's not to mention Man of Steel 2 should benefit from its novelty factor, with the incorruptible Batman playing antagonist to an equally unwavering Superman. So, I mean, you have the May release of Age of Ultron. You've got July releases for Pirates of the Caribbean, Man of Steel 2. I mean, what's going on? This is going to be busy, man.
This is several shots across the bow. This is a shot across the bow to Warner Brothers, and this is also Disney covering themselves in case Pirates 5 flops. You know, that's what I'm thinking. The Hank Ant-Man movie is going to be a safety valve because no one knows what Pirates 5 is going to be. Because, you know, Johnny Depp has already said that he's not really together with the concept, right? And it's a shot against the bow because they want to capitalize on, well, they messed up with Ben Affleck. Come see us with our original Ant-Man. You know, that's what I'm thinking it is now.
Hold on.
It's business and safety.
Hold on. Let's say if money is tight, hypothetically, and you have to choose from those three movies. And you only have to choose one. You only could choose one. What movie are you going to see? Let's be true.
Oh, it's going to be Batman Superman. Come on.
There
I am
go.
Not an idiot. I've
that,
told people this. All right?
There you go.
I've told people a combination of Batman Superman is going to bring in $1.5 to $2 billion. All right? And don't get it twisted. People wanted to see that for a long, long time. But I am just saying, this is Disney thinking, you know what? It's going to bail us out in case Pirates 5 flops, and we're going to do a shot. And they're thinking that way, and I'm thinking, and you're thinking, Cap, and Afro Nerd's thinking, it should be a setup, not a safety valve. And this is where oversaturation in the market is eventually going to kill the golden goose for Marvel/Disney.
Mistake.
Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Mistake.
All right, let's go to a quick Nerdcore group. When we get back, actually, I want to talk about Mighty Avengers number 1, a.k.a. the minority version of the Avengers or the Black Avengers. That just came out this week. And there's some things I missed in it. After reading it, that I have to reread and that I saw in the review, that led me to believe that it's better than I thought, but we still have to worry about the art. We talked about this before. The art is what people are complaining about. This hack of an artist.
I called
we'll
it.
We'll get to it. Yeah, people liking it, but they are a little disturbed by the art. All right, first up, this is Pharrell Williams, Happy. Happy from the Despicable Me 2 soundtrack. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Clap along
Williams from the Despicable Me 2 soundtrack, Happy, Happy. You know, when I saw Despicable Me 2, I have to confess, I saw it online by Despicable Means. And I had to admit, it is kind of a, it's one of those, well, listen, those animated films are just getting better and better, and you do get engrossed in this thing. And it was a scene where he essentially is falling in love, and he's dancing. He's dancing around, shopping, everything. So I remember the song because the song definitely fit the scene, and it is one of those songs where, you know, it's happy. So kudos to Pharrell Williams, also from the acronym NERD, N-E-R-D. So, of course, we're going to have something to do with him, you know, some kind of affiliation. Anyway, folks, again, this is the Afro Nerd. This is the Comic Shop. This is the Grindhouse. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Gentlemen, let's start our engines again. I want to talk about the Mighty Avengers number one. Now, there's so many Avengers iterations, which is disturbing about Marvel, for one thing. That's why I jettisoned out of the X-Men thing. I don't think I get any X-Men titles, which would have been unheard of years ago. But they have so many X-Men titles, I could give an F. This is PG show, so I could care less. It's almost annoying that they have. I mean, if they're not going to be necessarily connected to each other, why bother? So I'm out of the X-Men, and slowly, because of the film franchise, obviously it's Avengers fever, it's the suits, it's greed. There's an Avengers to everything. The only Avengers I read the regular Avengers and the new Avengers, and that's only because it has Black Panther as one of the essential characters in there. The art is great. Who's the artist? I mean, the writer on that, Daryl
Hickman.
Why am I? Repeat
Jonathan
that again.
Hickman.
Yeah,
Jonathan
Hickman.
Hickman.
Yeah, Hickman. I like Hickman's storytelling, so I'm in that. I like the concept of Mighty Avengers. We spoke about this before because it's mostly a minority. Minority-led team, you know, it's a minority team, essentially. But the art, I wasn't so sure about it. I was trying to give it a break, but Dow was really going in on this. And now
well,
I see what he means.
Yeah,
the
well,
hand
Mighty
poses. Well, hold on.
Yeah,
Greg Land.
Just to let you know, Mighty Avengers isn't written by Hickman, though. That's Al Ewing from British writer. From 2000 AD, he switched over to Marvel for this. So that's why I said the writing was going to be good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know Al Ewing's on this one. But Greg Land, we spoke about this before. And I was, I heard about Greg Land, believe it or not, from the Ultimate FF, Ultimate Fantastic Four. I remember he drew, if you want to call what he does drawing, he drew a rather Asian-looking Submariner, which is actually cool. He was pretty cool looking. It's okay, it's a little different. All right, but now I'm starting to see that he has can poses. I'm seeing the same poses in different books. What's going on here, Daryl?
It's called tracing. Tracing. It is called tracing. Yes. I warn people. I went, yo, if I could grab this as a novel, I'll buy it. But having to watch the same poses, the same faces, the same, no. And you know what's hilarious? I get into argument with land fans all the time, right? I go like, but you buy Mark Bagley. And I'm like, yeah, I buy Mark Bagley. Mark Bagley was the artist behind DC's Trinity with Busick, and of course Ultimate Spider-Man with Bendis. All right, and I go, here is the difference. Bagley, yeah, he doesn't have much differentiation on his faces, but the action shots and the poses that he draws make sense in the story. You could pick, I dare any Land fan listening now, pick up a book from Land, any title he's done, all right? And look at the action shots and look how they're talking. And I guarantee in a major action shot, you'll see something where you're like, well, if he's talking to him like this, why does she have her butt extended like that? That makes no sense given to what's happening in the storyline. This makes no sense in the current action thing. You know? And of course, again, and you think I'm nuts, you think I'm crazy when I go on these rants, look at the second page or third page of this book the first interaction with Luke Cage and Superior Spider-Man in Mighty Avengers. Go ahead and take a look at, now, Luke is talking behind Superior Spider-Man. Superior Spider-Man tilts his head about 75 degrees. I don't think that's, 175 degrees. I don't think that's humanly possible. But you know what happened? He traced the body position, and then he was like, oh, shoot, I have to make it look like they're talking to one another. So let me just tilt his head a little bit more. This ain't me hating. What this is me being sensible given the story. Sure. Artists love the babe photos, which artists doesn't? You know, sure, they love the action scenes, which artists doesn't? But when you do it, you have to be smart in the context of the story. You know, it's something Cap says all the time about movies, right? You can give me all the special effects you want. You can give me all the slam, bang, flash, beautiful, all of that. But I'm paying attention underneath. Let me see the plot. Let me see the writing. Let me see how the plot, the writing, and the art come together. The writing, on point. The plot, on point. The characters, I like. But the art is just like a Mike Tyson blow to the face from the 80s. That's what it is. I'm reading the words, but oh, there's one of Land's orgasm freaking faces. Oh, no, body isn't supposed to sound like that. Oh, you know? Top floor is yours, man.
Back over to Afro. That was hilarious.
All right, just to our audience once again, we're talking about The Mighty Avengers. Just came out last week, The Mighty Avengers number one. It's essentially a minority version of the Avengers. The storyline is also connected to the Infinity storyline, which we have to talk about as well, the Infinity Event storyline, and which means that the mainstream Avengers are off-world. They're off-Earth, I should say. So now who's left, in a way – The whole thing is that Thanos, I don't want to get too into, because I might be losing some folks, unfortunately, when you get into actual mythology and what's going on. But bottom line is, you have a new set of heroes to defend Earth because the mainstream heroes are gone. The heroes for those who are familiar with from the film, they're off Earth. So now you have black and brown folk essentially left with powers to defend Earth. So I'm going to go down the roster. We have Luke Cage, and we have a Power Man. Now, Luke Cage used to be called Power Man, but there's another Power Man, different power set. He's Afro-Latin, Victor Alvarez, White Tiger, Ava Ayala. She's a Latina. Spectrum, who's gone through so many name changes, I don't even want to talk about it. She used to be Captain Marvel, now she's Spectrum, Monica Rambeau. You have Superior Spider-Man that Daryl referenced, who is Otto Octavius in the head. So you have Doc Ock in the body of Peter Parker. Blue Marvel, which is a heavy hitter. He's a man of a black man. Falcon, Ronan, She-Hulk. So essentially you have a minority-based Avengers team. So the concept is actually a cool concept. And I would implore our audience to go to Comics Alliance. Go to comicsalliance.com, and there's an article, a review that actually goes into it. That's a rather kind review. It's not that the book sucks, but it's going to go back to really Greg Land's art, who may not be, you know, it may not be the cup of tea for some folks. But there's racial dynamics in this. There's a subtle racial play. I don't know if Daryl talked about this. There's a subtle racial play between Luke Cage and not Peter Parker, because Peter Parker would not have gone out like that. That's what makes it frustrating. You know, Peter Parker and Luke Cage had a really good relationship because they're working class heroes. But Otto Octavius is somewhat of a he's a maniacal elitist, and he's a know-it-all. And he essentially called Luke Cage a thug. He called him a thug. And he called his whole outfit a thug. No, you're working. You're not a real hero. You're working. That's one thing we got to talk about, too. Luke Cage, as one of the early black heroes, he was Luke Cage, hero for hire. So he's still hero for hire. So, I mean, how does that work now? But his reasons for being a hero are very plausible. He's got a family to feed. He can't do it for free, per se. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, hey, you ever hear anybody freaking do it to Iron Man? Because remember, Iron Man, still the public opinion mostly is that, Tony Stark isn't wearing the armor anymore. Iron Man's just a paid bodyguard. You know, remember, Tony's identity is still, you know, they somehow retrograded that, where half the population knows and half it doesn't. But you never hear anybody call Iron Man a sellout. See, this is what I got to reference sports again for this, all right? How come when in basketball guys fight, everybody's automatically a thug, but when guys fight, they're showing their passion for the sport. They're being brave and valiant. I go, but that's a fight. You know, that's the same thing. It's something underwritten. All right? Hey, I look at it this way. Hero, not hero, he's got a family support and he needs to get paid. All right? So guess what? He runs this Avengers team, sure, but he's still on the payroll at Rand International. So he still can't go out for jobs. You know? But at the same time, I don't hear anybody calling Paladin from the Heroes for Hire series before a paid goon. I don't hear anybody calling that to Misty Knight. Matter of fact, you know what? I would pay to see someone walk up to Misty Knight and say, "You're not a hero, you're a paid goon." Because we see Misty Knight in Fearless Defenders. That person would not be among us anymore. We'll just say it that way. Walk up to a strong black woman and say she's a paid good. Go right ahead. Hey, if I was Luke Cage, I don't care if that's Peter Parker, I'm hitting him into a building. Who the do you think you are to label me names?
Nah, but you know something? The way that he handled it actually makes sense. Because he said that. He said what you said. He said, at one time I would have put this guy through a wall, but I don't do that anymore. So to me, to see his maturation, that's another thing too. People forget what Luke Cage looked like. You know, he's a throwback to the 70s black exploitation thing. You know, the metal hat, headband, the go-go boots. I mean, now, you know, he's a respectable working class hero, really. He's a different guy. I mean, they had to change him for the times. And there was a point, Darryl, if you remember, maybe 10 years ago or 12 years ago, that there was a brief miniseries where they treated Luke Cage very much like a thug. Like, you know, he was still a hero, but it was very, very ghetto-ish. It was like a one-shot thing. I remember maybe a couple of issues, and I read it. I was like, this is crazy.
Matter of fact, the cover of the first issue was Cage and gold teeth in the front cover. I was like, yeah, I'm not picking this up.
And this wasn't that long ago. It's like for some reason they had to figure out how to humanize this guy because, again, we're talking about the 70s. You know, he was pretty much in line with what was going on with blaxploitation. But going into the 90s and 2000s, you can't interpret that. So they straightened him out. They straightened him out in a great way. So I respect it. But that one moment, there was a moment, and it's probably around a time where hip-hop was thug-alicious. That thug-alicious moment of hip-hop in the late 90s, early 2000s is when they brought that Luke Cage, and it was horrible. It was a minstrel show, dare I say. It's horrible. Don't pick up that book. But ladies and gentlemen, I would implore you to pick up Mighty Avengers number one. It is pretty good. The racial dynamics. There's a lot of stuff going on. And the irony is that Doc Ock, who is in the body of Peter Parker, is a criminal mastermind. He's the criminal lecturing Luke Cage. It is what it is.
And about Mighty Avengers, if you pick up the book, if you continue with the book, keep your eyes peeled for Spider-Hero. It might turn out to be a very familiar character and favorite here at the comic shop. I'm not going to reveal too much more about that, but let's just say I've trumpeted this young man's appearance since he first got on the scene last year. Hint, 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 and hint. Speculation is running wild. Let's just say it like that.
All right. Okay, folks, once again, this is the Comic Shop, the Grindhouse edition of the Comic Shop. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I want to move along from this into one other subject, of course. You know what? I want to talk about Thief of Thieves, but I'll say that in a minute. Let's go to DC screwing up a game. Now, last week we spoke about DC higher-ups screwing around with this deal with the Batwoman wedding. Batwoman is gay, she's a lesbian, and she has a partner, and they did a kibosh on there being some kind of ceremony of these two getting together. That was controversial. Now there's something that I glanced at and really couldn't fathom it. It's just weird. DC has had this contest, I guess an artist contest, for folks to submit drawings of Harley Quinn. Now, for those who are familiar with the Harley Quinn character, she's not from the comic books originally. She's actually from the animated series, and she became so popular that she crossed over from the animated series into the regular publication. So she's a popular girlfriend, in quotes, girlfriend of the Joker, and she is a mad woman, psychologically deranged, formerly a psychologist or psychiatrist. Anyway, without even getting to her origin, she's a female Joker somewhat. They said, okay, there's this talent search contest. Let's draw her not only suggestively, I guess, but also in suicide poses. What the hell was that about? Daryl?
Well, I'll do it simply, and this is where they made the mistake. Since she's part of a book called The Suicide Squad, DC thought it would be fun to, okay, we'll have this Harlequin contest where we'll put Harley in a bunch of suicide-type situations. DC, have you read your internet chat rooms before doing this? You know how many depraved people you have as fans, all right? Some of them are artists. Right? So it would plant her in suicide poses just shows so much lack of thinking. It's unbelievable. And the ironic thing about this is, I believe last Monday, all right, they spotlighted that scene in an All-Star Superman where Superman is on the roof with the girl that's about to commit suicide. A powerful scene. Suicide prevention places have used this photo to encourage people not to. Talk it out. Don't think about it. Don't do it. And then at the end of the week, you do this contest. You know? Kat, I want to say it's a whole new level of not thinking or ignorance, but I've used that for DC before. I mean, I need a new word for DC. I've used just about everything that I can on this PG-13 program. I have used every word I can think of without going into blue language. Kat, help me out here. How dumb is this?
See, what you have happening now is you have the non-essentials who have become essentials with this due to the advent of what happens with the internet. You put up something right away, everybody can respond. The fan who they perceived as a minor essential, because they have to buy the books, of course, but they really think of it from a standpoint, we give you this, you're just going to get it. That's just what it is. We dictate to you. But that has changed. The non-essential has become totally essential, and they have to understand that. If you have a voice on the internet, people get together via chat rooms, forums, bloggers, and say, we don't like this. There goes about, through the whole internet, a change begins to take place. And we've seen this happen several times before. Now also, too, you have other places. The psychiatry of America and everything, they weigh in, they tell you this is not good and everything else, just because of what happens via the internet. So they need to get with it and need to understand. They have to be more careful. Otherwise, they'll constantly be screwing themselves, you know, with the sandpaper condom. You know, that can be kind of rough.
Ow.
PG show. So, you know, they have to be very careful. This, in my opinion, is just a mess up. You know, they weren't thinking. It just went whoop. It just went out there, and they got caught again. They're messing up. Back to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different thing. You know, the suicide storylines that he's talking about. You know, that's because the missions are suicide. It's not literally the person committing suicide to themselves. You know, I something about that. And plus, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, in a case of irony, you think about Lee Thompson Young. The young actor who was, you know, the young African-American actor from the famous Jet Jackson from Rizzoli and Isles was his last thing. But he also played Cyborg. He played Cyborg on Smallville for a story arc. And, you know, he just passed on through suicide about, 3 weeks ago? So now you're kind of poking fun at suicide? So you had a pretty popular actor who played a DC character who commits suicide, and then you have a whole marketing campaign around suicide as if it's a joke. Not a good look. I mean, I just wanted to, who? These people make these mistakes over and over again. Like, no one's in the room with any common sense to say, hey, you know what? This may not be a good look. Let's pull it back a little. Completely clueless. Completely clueless people.
I try to tell people it's not like I enjoy hating on them, but there are far too many successful people in this room to constantly be making the same mistakes over and over and over again. You know, it's just, okay, we have this idea. All right, we're gonna try to build up the profile of Suicide Squad. We want to build them up. After Trinity War, after Forever Evil, we want to build it up. Let's help with this contest. Yeah. Why couldn't it be, Suicide Squad fans, give us your best pictures of Harley Quinn? No! You go the extra mile and say, in suicide poses. I mean, Jimmy Palmiotti, you're a favorite writer of mine. You should have went to creative one time and went, seriously, is this the idea we're doing? Come on. No. You know, Alex Scott, you should have, no. We can't do this. Jeff Johns, hello? You're supposed to be the boss. This? Frustrating. Very, very frustrating. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right. Let's forego the musical break because we've got about 8 minutes remaining before we go next door for Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. You know, I'm always, as usual, I'm always late on things. And I absolutely love Thief of Thieves. Now, Thief of Thieves is a book that's been out for, I guess, almost a year and a half now, maybe 2 years. And it's an image book, and it ties in with what we spoke about before, gentlemen, with Image really trying to go at DC and Marvel in a different way. And these books that are not superhero genre books, with Robert Kirkman, and there are others too, Greg Rucka as well, but Robert Kirkman, he's becoming an industry unto himself now. Robert Kirkman, if you're familiar with his name, ladies and gentlemen, he is behind the creator of Walking Dead. And now it appears that he has another property that's going to be on AMC that if they do it anywhere close to that comic book, which I'm pretty sure they probably will, it's going to be another hit, undoubtedly, because I can't put this book down. Thief of Thieves, Robert Kirkman, essentially Ocean's 11 on steroids. Is that a pretty good description, Daryl? You have a super thief? Super thief thing. And also I like the fact that it representation. I'm assuming that they're going to have the actual talent to match the characters. That Thief of Thieves, just to give a quick rundown, the main character is a character named Redmond, and even then he doesn't really want to accept that name. But Redmond is a master thief that has never gotten caught, and there's this cat and mouse game between Redmond, this super thief, and a African American, like an FBI agent or I guess she's like a Fed. She's attractive the way she's drawn in the book, and you know it's one of those things where they have this relationship, this cat and mouse thing. I sense there's some kind of attraction there also. But the bottom line is the guy just cannot be caught. And you see, he has a screw-up son that looks like him, but is not him. He wants to try to live on his father's reputation. I don't want to get too much into it, but the bottom line is pick up Thief of Thieves. Just reading this thing, elaborate schemes, how he's able to get out of things, how it's going one way but ends up going another way. Excellent character. I can see how this guy was able to get this greenlit to be on AMC TV. What are your thoughts on this, Daryl? Thief of Thieves.
I'll just give him a very simple comparison, and you'll get it right away. Think Nicolas Cage's character in Gone on 60 Seconds, all right? Mix that with Parker, all right? And then throw in the Ocean's 11 theme. Because remember, Nicolas Cage in The Gone in 60 Seconds, he never got caught. They always came close, but they never caught him in boosting cars and all of that, right? Then you take Parker, who's a determined criminal, and people, if you don't know Parker, to think of the Mel Gibson movie Payback. That's the type, he's got that determination and all of that. And then toss in Ocean's 11, where he's got a crew. And unfortunately, he's also got people trying to live off of his name while doing no work or being never-do-wells, all right? That's essentially it, all right? And at the constant time, he has to keep his people in check. At the same time, he's got to stay one step ahead of this Fed. That's like triple work, and he has to do it essentially every storyline. He has to do it, and it's gone from the point of I wonder if he was going to get caught to you read the book, seeing how bad the screw ups are happening all around him, and wondering how can he stay uncaught. I'd say that's a pretty good description, Astronaut, right there.
Well, not only that, but the thing that gets me, and we spoke about this before, is that I think that Image, I don't think Image is ever going to be able to, you know, topple DC or Marvel, but they've been able to carve their own niche that was going to be extremely profitable and is going to be very much an industry. This whole thing, I mean, it's a sneaky way to get movies made and to get
void.
TV. I'm sorry?
Inherit the void.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it makes me think of the departed Dwayne McDuffie, that when he did Milestone Comics, which was a minority-themed comic book company in the early 90s, if it was this good, I don't know, maybe Darryl might have a different opinion, but it's just something about, well, then again, it took 20 years for Image to get this good, didn't it? So if we had a point where it stuck around long enough, I mean, there needs to be, I think someone needs to explore there being another minority-based comic book company and have it be this good.
Well, I'll just say it like this. For the big two, for Marvel and DC, you don't have to be chained to them. If the current BS we've exposed on this show gets you tired of that, then when you go to your comic shop, venture out. Go ahead. Dynamite is doing great jobs with some of the older characters and some of the old TV shows. IDW has got a great thing doing the licensed stuff like G.I. Joe and Transformers, if that's what you're into. Okay? Dark Horse is doing a great job with creators, just letting them be themselves, and their horror line is to die for. Plus, Dark Horse also got the Star Wars contract. And then you turn to Image, and Image is like a smorgasbord of, okay, creators, you got characters, you need a platform, we will release you and we will let you do it. And the misconception is Image is now doing this. Image has always done this. Under Jim Valentino, he gave the new cats a chance. And those new cats, you're seeing them pop up. We've mentioned Jonathan Hickman, all right?
Give it a
chance. Alright folks, once again, it's always a pleasure. This is the Comic Shop. We're going next door for the Afternoon Radio Show. Darryl, it's always been a pleasure. We'll do it again next week, gentlemen. Let's get to it.
Spot for the beard?
I think not.
Rodney King should have got his head beat for driving drunk and being grown in a Hyundai.
OJ did it.
Rosa Parks ain't did nothing but sit her black tail down.
Hey, I'm going to back you up on that because, see, look, he was on the bus back in the day and he's on the bus now.
Eddie, not only is what you're saying not true, it is wrong and disrespectful for you to discuss Rosa Parks in that way.
Exactly.
Wait. Hold on here. Is this a barbershop?
Yes,
I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation. That's
yeah,
all right.
You got to tell Rosa Parks down.
Man, ain't nobody exempt in the barbershop. You know that. Ain't nobody exempt. You can talk about whoever and whatever, whenever you want to in the barbershop.
Why you got
to
tell Rosa down like this, Eddie? You know you're wrong. Keep on walking. You're wrong. You're walking by yourself this time, pal. I ain't with you. I'll tell you one thing. You better never let Jesse Jackson hear you talking about that.
Man, Jesse Jackson.
Oh! 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 O large. You're large.
Randy, Tito, Freddy, action. I'll take them all. Hey, Randy,
that's all I got.
I love this
place.
And
you,
Chris. You know, Calvin.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, people. This is the second half. Once again, this is Afro Radio featuring Captain Kirk. Giving many thanks to, of course, the invincible Daryl B. from the last show, The Comic Shop. The call-in number, folks, the water is warm, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. We only have an hour, so we've really got to get through these topics. First up, let's give you some urban alternative groove to get your mind right. This is Janelle Monae coming off of a new album. Do they even make albums anymore, or should I say MP3? I keep on messing that up. Electric Lady. This one I really dig because it has the indefatigable Royal Badness, his Royal Badness, Prince, featuring Ms. Monae. Give them what they love. Check it out. We'll be back in a few moments. And again, let's groove.
I made a
Okay, folks, I was being self-indulgent. I had to let that ride. Once again, that was the great Janelle Monáe featuring a friend, Prince Rogers Nelson. And again, giving them what they love from the latest Electric Lady CD, MP3, album, whatever you want to call it nowadays. Folks, this is the Afro Nerd Grindhouse Edition. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Captain, you are needed, I think, on the bridge. I think. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
How's your mojo today, Sir Afro Nerd? How's it? How's it?
I don't know yet. We'll see. Why do you ask?
All right.
All right. Folks, let's get into something brief. Let's keep it light for this particular moment. Keep it light before we get heavy. I want to talk about Arsenio Hall coming back into the fold.
Yes, sir.
I liked Arsenio in the 90s. I believe his show started out in around 89, and I think it gave up at around 94. And it gave up or was canceled really around controversy. I know they had the minister, Louis Farrakhan. Minister Louis Farrakhan was there. He did a couple of moves that were a bit risque. And then he went head-to-head against Johnny Carson. Was it not Johnny? I'm sorry, Jay Leno at the time. And there were some problems. And he ended up losing the show or canceling the show. But he always owned the show, so I think he had some money there. It was always some money, and he says that he gave up on the show to raise his son. His son is now 14, so he's back into the fold. He pretty much looks the same. You know, black don't crack, as they say. So he's actually sharper, I think, now. You know, I'm always into the whole haberdashery thing, so I like the way that he dresses now more so than he did then. That might just be the circumstances of the time. You know, it's 2013, you know, earrings and wild long suits and that kind of thing. But now he's got a much sharper look. And after reading on some of the reviews, I started to notice that his interviewing style is definitely different than the other TV show hosts now that I see, talk show hosts that I see now. In other words, he doesn't have cue cards. And he gives the impression that he has an inside track with the guests, that he actually hangs out with them. And that's a component. You know, he's a Hollywood guy. He's been around for a number of years, and he's more conversational. And he's not afraid to ask certain things, and he's not afraid to put things out there. When he interviewed Ice Cube, I forgot about this. There was a riff, I think, in one of Ice Cube's songs, he said something that was not so kind towards Arsenio Hall because he wasn't on there. Arsenio confronted that issue with him and said, hey, there was a reason why I couldn't have you on the show. And it was, they spoke about it and hashed it out. And and Ice Cube had to admit that he would not have the film career that he has today if it wasn't for Arsenio. He met John Singleton because John Singleton was an intern on the Arsenio Hall show. And that chance meeting between Ice Cube and John Singleton is what led to his career 20-plus years later. So he could not, even if he wanted to, he could not continue to be angry with Arsenio. But it was a reason why he was not able to have him on the show initially because of the suits. The suits had a problem with him having his act on the show. And that goes to show you how things really work. So I like what I'm seeing with Arsenio, but I said this at the last show. We got into an Arsenio conversation during the comic shop. And I think what made Arsenio successful the first time was that he did allow or did provide a space for hip-hop at that time, for hip-hop performers to be seen on a worldwide stage at that time. Now, hip-hop is the predominant music, rightfully or wrongfully. And as our audience knows, I'm on the other thing now. I still play hip-hop. I play a certain strain of hip-hop. I'm not playing this minstrel strain of hip-hop. But now this is a new age. This is 2013. Your top rapper or one of your top rappers is a white person. Your top golfer is a man of color. Your president is a man of color. So the dynamics have changed, and I hope he doesn't go into that comfort zone of having these minstrels on the show. He needs to start looking into Afropunk because Afropunk is rising. Black rock is rising. Something different. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, at this given time, you know, minstrel music doesn't need a platform. They have their own platform. They're a movement. That's what it is. A lot of the predominant rap music that people are listening to, it is minstrel music. Some artists do minstrel music very well. Jay-Z does minstrel music very well. That's what it is. I listen to some of Jay-Z stuff, but let's clarify, you know, let's quantify. It is minstrel music. That is what it is. It doesn't need any bolstering. It doesn't need any pushing up. It is what it is. Now, there are other artists out there that are not doing minstrel rap. Maybe he could bring through some of those. And just as you mentioned, the black rock, Afropunk, it would be good to have Arsenio Hall as a platform for these groups, and he could push them up further, just as he did in the early 90s with these other different type of rap groups, when rap wasn't a total. Of course, you had some minstrel stuff, but the thing you had was balance, you see. And that's the same reason why, at this given point, I can listen to Jay-Z at this point, and it doesn't affect me. I see what Jay-Z is because I have a reference point because I'm coming from the 80s. I'm coming from the 70s. I heard this type of music. The young person is not listening to this type of music, so they actually need something else. So then when you have something else, when you have the variety, you can look at other things and enjoy it. Say, okay, this is a bunch of shenanigans, but this shenanigans sounds good, but we also have this over here. This is more something that's uplifting. This is positive. Yeah, and I like both of them. So he can be that type of individual that brings, that delivers the platform for these other individuals at this given time, because we don't need any more minstrel platforms. We have plenty. They have plenty of outlets. So it'll be interesting to see what he does and what direction that he goes with. And I wish him the best because I always did like Arsenio Hall. I like the way he did it up. I like his presentation. He was just good at what he did at the given time. So I wish him the best. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, it was a testament to the times, I thought. You know, it is a evening talk show. It had a party atmosphere. I knew that George Lopez seemed to be channeling Arsenio last year or a year and a half ago, because I believe he had a show as well. And his show had that party atmosphere, that larger-than-life atmosphere. So it came off very Arsenio Hall-ish. And I believe he had Arsenio on the show and spoke about, because actually Arsenio was responsible for George Lopez's career. So, some, you know, you have to give props where props are due. And, again, he just has to prevent himself from falling back into old habits, because this is a different time. You have the Internet. You have Yahoo now. I'm sorry, YouTube, excuse me. You have the Internet. You have YouTube. You got to play to a different audience, different formats. It's a whole different scene. And I don't know if the minstrels know that their time is up because, you know, money is still being made for being a minstrel. But the reality is that what made Arsenio work the first time around was that at that time, hip-hop was still evolving. You know, when you saw the last show, I referenced this the last segment. When you saw his final show, which is available on YouTube, and all the love and accolades that came from the hip-hop community, all those popular hip-hop artists of that time, a lot of them came out to perform impromptu rap performances for Arsenio, and there were women, men, just different types of hip-hop. Something that you will not see now. You don't have a female presence in hip-hop like you did 20-something years ago. It wasn't enough 20 years ago, but there was certainly more. You could go to at least 10 female hip-hop artists at that time. Now you can only go to one, two, maybe three. Really one. We know who that is, Nicki Minaj. Now the video vixen has taken over that female presence that we saw 20 years ago. So the hip-hop from that day has changed. I hope he's not lazy or just saying, okay, we're just going to throw a hip-hop act because that's what's going on. No. Hip-hop was the subcultural component at that time. He has to tap into what the subcultural component is at this time. And I've been doing some podcast listening, Captain, to some of our older shows, believe it or not, some of our older shows, as well as some other podcasters. And when you see the progression of the Afropunk movement, where it started out as one hall back in 2007, to now 60,000 people showing up at a weekend. It is the number two musical event in New York. The number two. That's how big of a thing this has become. So it would behoove Arsenio Hall, to actually tap in to these other musical acts that are not the minstrel acts. But I wish him luck. I wish him luck. They're saying that he did pretty well in the key demographics. The money demographics, he did exceptionally well. But 20 years is a long time, and unfortunately, you have a set of Generation Y-ers who probably have never heard Arsenio. That's how amazing it is that much time could go by, and you have a whole generation that will have to, like, well, who is he? So it is what it is. Folks, this is Afro Radio, the second half, the Grindhouse edition of the show. The call-in number, of course, is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I want to talk about one other matter that troubles me. CNN's Don Lemon, the news commentator. Of course, he's been in the news for the last couple of weeks because of his comments levied toward the black community, instructional comments that to some went over very well and to others did not go over very well. Anyway, I appreciate what he said, and I thought it was a good look. But now he has a gig with Tom Joyner. Radio legend Tom Joyner, who I have no real affection for. I think he does minstrel radio pretty much the way that Steve Harvey does minstrel radio, just as Earthquake now. Earthquake, the comedian, who I do find funny, but I don't know if I would give him a radio show. He has a radio show now, I guess maybe soon to be syndicated, but it's in New York. He has the afternoons. Steve Harvey has the mornings. So you have 24-hour minstrel in New York radio. They're not letting it up. I mean, I know some folk have problems with me going in on Steve Harvey. If I call it like I see it, you know, the shenanigans, the joking, and he had a cover up for his girl, the Wesley Snipes. I shouldn't go there.
Whoa.
Not the real Wesley Snipes, but
Underwood.
But yeah, Cheryl Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to cover up for her, and now we have Earthquake, and now Don Lemon is on this new show. Well, he's new to this gig. So I want to talk about that. He said something about who the new civil rights leader should be, channeling Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx was at the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and he was calling out for Jay-Z and for T.I. and all these other minstrels to be the new civil rights elite. I don't think so. I don't think so. Please don't do that. So I want to play a quick urban alternative groove, something that I would call psychedelic soul. Psychedelic soul, I'm learning now. I'm always researching music. And black rock has had another name. During the late 60s, it was called Psychedelic Soul. So, and also this is what Janelle Monáe has deemed her music to be, Psychedelic Soul. This is another code name for Black Rock. This is Rotary Connection doing their version of Respect. Now, Rotary Connection was a supergroup. Well, you know what? I'll give more details after the break. Again, quick groove, then we'll talk about Don Lemon. This is Rotary Connection, Respect, a classic. We'll be right back. Incarnations of Black Rock, dubbed Psychedelic Soul. That was Rotary Connection, and that group was a super group that featured Minnie Riperton, who is also Maya Rudolph's mama. Maya Rudolph, of course, you know her from SNL, and also she's done quite a few movies with Chris Rock and so forth, and she's a talent unto herself. Maya, as a, I guess, as a goof, she may not describe it as such, but it's somewhat of a goof. She has a Prince cover band called Princess, that she and the Roots are the backup band to that. So it's all connected, folks. But again, that was Rotary Connection featuring Minnie Riperton. Respect, respect. All right, folks, getting back into the fold, this is Africa Radio. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. I want to talk about Don Lemon. And again, I have a lot of respect for him because – him being, well, first of all, he's a alternative lifestyle. He's a gay man. a liberal working for CNN, and he had enough a few weeks ago and had one of those blackout moments like Dr. Cosby, like myself, like others that I suspect who are listening to the show that want to say what they really want to feel, what they really feel like. They say they want to talk about some honesty. So he had a moment where he had a five-point plan, so to speak, for black folk about littering, about educating yourself, getting up from under this N-word, educating yourself. He was chiming in after Bill O'Reilly, which is a no-no. You can't be an independent thought. A broken clock tells it the correct time twice a day. The captain and myself use that adage all the time because it's true. Even someone who's wrong most of the time may come up and circle the right answer on the test. It happens sometimes. This time, Bill O'Reilly circled the right answer on a test, and Don Lemon channeled that, and he's to be respected for coming out for something that is unpopular to many who have a progressive mindset. Having said that, he messed up this time, I suspect. He was on the Tom Joyner show, and then he's talking about having these people that I would consider to be minstrels to be the new civil rights leaders or to pick up the baton. These minstrels don't want to pick up the baton. They don't want to do it. If they pick up the baton, I suspect they want to lace it in gold and platinum. They're not going to pick it up for some kind of reality. They're not going to do that. They want to wear it around their necks. No. So, Captain, what are your thoughts on this misstep? Do you think he's right? I mean, he's basically saying that because of the times that we're living in, it just so happened that in the 60s you had Sidney Poitier, you had Harry Belafonte, you had these stellar talents that fit in with the civil rights movement. But to me, their products, the products that they were producing, their talent didn't necessarily conflict with the movement. Someone like Jay-Z, what he's talking, when he makes nigga music, that to me conflicts with there being any real substantive civil rights movement. What are your thoughts as I find this clip?
Well, those individuals in the past, their inner being radiated with the civil rights movement and some of their music, not all of it, but some of their music also radiated with the civil rights movement. In order to be involved with something civil rights, unless you're one of these hustlers, and that's debatable, but to be really involved, your soul, so to speak, your inner being, has to be entrenched with the movement. You have to believe it. These individuals that Don Lemon is talking about, they have a voice, and that's why he's saying that they should be able to switch that on. But it's not so easy because it has to come from your inner being. Now, why does this happen? You have something that happens in your life that one makes a change and then says, this is what I have to go and do. Or you just are caught up in that culture at the given time. We have a different culture. We have a menstrual culture. We have a victimization culture. It's not actually hip-hop culture. It is actually or street culture. It is victimization culture. So it's going to be very hard for these individuals to really push that kind of movement because you need non-victimization culture in order to say, get up and do what's necessary. That's the reality of it at this given time. So I see his point of view because those individuals have a voice. They have a voice, but he's missing it. They don't have the essence in their being, their empty shells. It's menstrual business. It's also victimization culture within these beings too. So I don't really think they're going to be able to do it unless something dramatic happens in their life, maybe even life-threatening. Who knows? But then again, some of these individuals had life-threatening situations, and it didn't change them in any way, shape, or form. It is what it is. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, I'm still trying to find this clip. You got to hear it, though. But I see what he's saying, but to me, it doesn't bring it with any sense of reality. I mean, you're not going to make someone like Jay-Z, who was a former drug dealer from Marcy Projects, who talks about he got his education from Marcy University, who said recently, with his conflict with Harry Belafonte, who said that, well, you know, my presence is charity. My presence is charity. Really? Really? All right. I have the clip.
Hold on.
Let's go to it.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah, just to backtrack, so some people don't say, but some people will say, well, Malcolm X was a street hustler, and look what Malcolm X did. So is there a possibility that someone such as Jay-Z, is there a possibility that someone such as Jay-Z could become, you know, the civil rights leader? No, because he didn't make that kind of money that Malcolm X did. If Malcolm X was making that kind of money, you would not have been able to get him to become Malcolm X. So that ends all of that for all you individuals that will turn around and email and say, well, you know, they said on this show that, you know, and also Malcolm X. So you know how you get those little people that like the tidbit and all the other time. That's all I'm just saying. Back over you, sir. Rap on Earth.
Well, I found the clip, but just to go back to that Malcolm X, you know, some would try to make that analogy.
Yes,
the best person who would address that was the late Betty Shabazz, his wife. I remember hearing a program, an interview with her, and I forgot who the interviewer was, but the person asked her about his past. And she said, I really couldn't speak about Malcolm X's past because when I was dealing with Malcolm, he had dealt with his dysfunctionalism. That's exactly how she put it. I mean, using that term. That dysfunctional self, she never saw that. So in order for any of these individuals that we would deem as minstrels, they haven't, from my estimation, dealt with their internal dysfunctionalism. You've got to make that change. You've got to become a conscious person. I don't perceive these individuals to be conscious. Be that as it may, this is a clip from Tom Joyner, where Don Lemon, I believe it's his first appearance, his new side gig as a commentator on that program. Here we go.
I say now is the time to talk about solutions. What is wrong with telling people to dress appropriately, speak well, speak appropriately? Am I wrong here? What's going on?
Every Tuesday and Thursday on the TJMS is Don Lemon's commentary, brought to you by General Motors. The all-new 2014 Chevrolet Impala, inspired by the past, influenced by the present, driven towards the future. The 2014 Chevrolet Impala, find new roads. From New York, Don Lemon, good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Good.
What
Welcome.
Up, Don?
Oh, here we go, huh? Y'all, am I going to get myself
lemon,
in trouble
man.
This morning?
Let's go.
So, listen, you guys know how sometimes when you things can be right there in your face and you don't know about it, right? I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for the show yesterday. I was talking to your producers and I said, what am I going to do? And I took my dog for a walk and you know what street I live on up in Harlem? It's Frederick Douglass Boulevard.
Hmm.
Then we walked across to Adam Clayton Powell, across there.
It gets black, real black.
It gets black. And then we crossed Malcolm X Boulevard and we were going to Marcus Garvey Park to walk the dog.
It sounds like the beginning of a joke.
No, it's true. It sounds like, but Sybil, that was the answer right in front of me. So that's what I want to talk to you guys about on my first day here on the Tom Joyner Morning Show. I want to talk to you about leaders, leadership, specifically black leaders. I want to talk about who they are really these days, but more importantly, I want to talk to you and ask the question about the ones that we have. Are they relevant? Do they help or hurt not just black people, but society as a whole? Have you ever thought about that? Who are the black leaders, whoever your black leader might be? That's one of the biggest differences, I believe, between our leaders of today and the leaders who came out of the struggle. The ones who came out of the struggle, they wanted us to question everything, even them. Dr. King said you should question everything. And the ones we have today, do they do that? I'll let you decide for yourself. But could they possibly be keeping us from advancing as individuals and collectively as a people because they have a stake in our thinking remaining the same, stagnant? Might some of them be keeping us from evolving because of their idea of Dr. King's dream hasn't evolved past 1963? Now, I would venture to guess that if Dr. King were still alive, his dream, in 2013 would have evolved and changed into a bigger and better version of the one that he had 50 years ago. And the strategy to realize that dream would have evolved, changed, expanded over the past 50 years as well. And I wholeheartedly believe that just as Dr. King aligned himself with black power brokers and cultural influences of the 1960s, the unions, the churches, the preachers, and as Tom schooled me a couple weeks ago, the radio hosts, the DJs, right?
Yeah.
I think he would do the same thing with the black cultural influences of today. And who do you think that is?
Tell
Any
me.
Idea?
Hmm.
That's our young artists, like Jay-Z, like Kanye West.
Good point.
Like Pharrell, like Frank Ocean. Why am I so sure about that? I want you to ask yourself, the last time you heard a young person walking around singing a church hymn. Because just yesterday, I'm walking on St. Nicholas Avenue, two separate young men were singing a French Montana rap song. In a word about nothing. You know that song?
Yeah.
In a word about nothing, right? They actually say the word. They're walking with their headphones on and they're screaming on St. Nicholas Avenue. So that's why in my work as a journalist, I constantly challenge and urge the rap, hip-hop, and music power brokers to step onto the stage of positive influence and into the fulfillment of Dr. King's dream. Because whether they realize it or not, they are the new breed. They are the new black leaders. They are the influencers of our time. And I don't mean that I challenge them in a negative way. I mean that in the best possible way, that their names can too one day be worthy of boulevards and avenues and streets. Yep, you Waka Flocka, you Gucci Mane, you T.I. Luda can be the next Harry Belafonte of the struggle. Beyonce, Rihanna, you can be the next Lena Horne or Mahalia Jackson, of course, in your own way. Jamie Foxx, you guys saw Jamie Foxx at the March on Washington last week.
Mm-hmm.
He got it right. You guys are the guys to replace the old heads. You are the relevant ones right now. And you know why? Because unlike some of the black leaders who get so much criticism today, your livelihoods, artists, don't depend on keeping people thinking the same way they did half a century ago. Your art signifies that one of the greatest minds of our times, what Christopher Hitchens said. He said, quote, "One of the beginnings of human emancipation is the ability to laugh at authority." The Bible even says, "Test everything, hold on to God." Thomas Jefferson said, "Question with boldness even the existence of a God." Buddha said, quote, "Do not believe in anything merely on the authority of your teachers and elders." We must question everything, including our leaders and especially ourselves. So here's my challenge for you today on my first day here. Even if it's just for today, to question what you think you know, to take the exact opposite position that you would normally take in a conversation or a discussion, even if it's about race, whatever it is, and see where that leads you. Become curious today instead of judgmental. And in the process, you might just change your mind.
Make them think, Don. Don Lemon.
All right. That was about a little bit over 5 minutes. I wanted to let that ride. I wanted to give Mr. Lemon the courtesy of completion. You know, a lot of what he said, because he's an educated man, a lot of what he said, I would agree with. I really could not deconstruct everything he said. But some things I can deconstruct. Yes, I can. And I take issue with this notion, Captain, that we have to beg and plead with a segment of the black entertainment elite, the current elite. We have to beg for them to be conscious or to be respectful. Or to just acknowledge. I mean, you can't make something into someone or make someone into something that he's not. I think someone even referenced this in the chat room, that this was pretty much endemic to the folks at that time. Harry Belafonte was a protege of now I'm forgetting his name. I must be going through some dementia, Captain. Jesus, why can't I think? It'll come to me. Bottom line is, Paul Robeson, sure, finally kicked in. The ginseng's finally working. You're talking about people who come, who just come from a different space. Ozzie Davis, Ruby Dee. I mean, please. You can't compare. I mean, these, you know, you're talking about folks who are the new generation, who haven't studied these people. They don't know about them. They could care less. You have Nicki Minaj, who is literally showing her ass to the world to make a quick buck. I'm not so sure if I even want this Caucasian hair-hatted woman to come in as some kind of civil rights representative. Let her be a licensed fool. And I used these terms last week, licensed fool, court jesters. Those terms were real. They're real terms. They mean something. They're meant to be distractions. You know, they're all about getting a buck. You, even for their time, and you can include the athletes of that period as well, they jeopardize a great deal of money to take a stance on something. They were not so glued to finance the way that these folks are now. They just were not. I believe Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was Lew Alcindor at the time, Lew Alcindor, Muhammad Ali, and Jim Brown, those three athletes at that time, they got together to create a community financial initiative in the mid to late 60s. That was unheard of. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that those athletes, because they had a certain level of cachet, they had a certain level of money, and a certain level of media access, and they were, for them to think that way, it goes to show you just how sophisticated those athletes were to consider that. Now when athletes get together today, when they get together today, it's not for that. It's for personal means. I'm looking at the Miami Heat, for instance. I don't want to go too deep, Captain, but there were three athletes at that time also. But they didn't get together for community. See, now they get together for some kind of surface-level cause. They'll get together for Trayvon. They'll put a hood on. They'll put a hoodie on the cover of Ebony. But that doesn't carry the same weight as to get together to create a business initiative for the community. They don't compare.
All right. Let me chime in on that. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing with those individuals of the past. Today we're dealing with a different beast, feral beast. Let me tell you the one of the big difference. But before 74, 75, according to statistics, I have to go there, 80%, they say, 80% of the black households had a black man in it. Is once we get to between 74 to 75, we go down to 65%, and then the degradation has started ever since then. These individuals that are coming up right now that Mr. Don Lemon wants to be civil rights leaders, they're so far removed. That's one of the reasons why, because these are individuals that are not being raised with their fathers. You see, there was a baton passed from father to son, just as the oracle to this day still passes you information. You see? And it's key a lot of times, even though you're a wise individual, Sir Afro Nerd. Those individuals during that time, 60s, 50s, they had that. These individuals don't have that. Now, in even Christianity, they say when you're cut off from the spiritual father, you get lost. Now, when you're cut off from your earthly father, you are totally lost. So now we have lost individuals. They have not found themselves. Now you're telling this person they have to pick up the baton. See the problem there? You see the problem there? It's a big problem. It's a huge problem. So it's a different, gormless, feral beast that we're dealing with right now. Those individuals were not that because they had the knowledge. Not all of them, but a lot more of them than we do now. Being passed from the older over to the younger. So they knew how to move. So when Daddy said, I did my thing, now you have to take it up. Here's the baton, I pass it to you. This is what you go out here and do. Now make a world that was better than what I had. See, they don't have any of that. They don't have any of that. So Waka Flocka could only deal from a perspective of his dysfunctional, gormless, feral self. I just got money. I'm straight. Screw what you saying. That's just what it is. It is what it is. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
You know, and the whole thing, I hope I can find, I had an old Waka Flocka clip somewhere, Captain, that this young man can't even, it's horrible. I found it. This is who Don Lemon wants, ladies and gentlemen. This is why it is imperative to listen to what we're talking about, because we're going to tell you the truth, straight with no chaser. And I don't like the idea, and I think this makes sense. What we say, you could deconstruct what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, but the bottom line is, it has to make sense. It doesn't make any sense. Why are we held captive to these people? We're being held captive by these current artists as if there's nowhere else to go. The world is larger than the 20 or 30 or 40 artists that are currently in your face. But we have to depend on them. This is a social media age where anyone can be a leader of substance per se, or has the ability to take advantage of that. We don't have to rely on Jay-Z. Who's Jay-Z? So anyway, this is Waka Flocka, one of the names that came up in Don Lemon's discussion. When I saw how it was written, that Waka Flocka was a person that he thought about. This is who he wants to be a representative. Hold on.
You know, of course, it's back to school time right now. What are your thoughts on education?
My thoughts on education? Education big, though. I ain't gonna lie. Even though I did finish school, I got a GED, but education big, though, bro. That's about the biggest thing I ever did was drop out. I need it now because I need the wordplay probably being crazy. You know what I'm saying? But education's good. I just did some high school.
Any plans on ever going back or
going back?
Yeah.
As soon as I jump down this route, man. Gotcha. I might study into geometry. Like, I'm a mathematic person, real talk.
Are you really?
Real talk.
Nice.
But I'll do school giveaways. I just did school giveaway in Queens, though.
Or you about some books? Some
books. I'll talk.
That's it.
Thank you.
All right.
And today,
I had to stop it. I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't take it.
Well, here's the key point. You said something that was very key. They have to deal with a dysfunctionalism. They deal with that, then they can take up the baton. But that's major. They have to deal with it. If they deal with that first, but it's hard for these individuals to deal with that when they're getting that check, when they're getting that money, when they're rocking that big chain. They don't feel that it is necessary for them to deal with that. You see? Profound what you said. Very profound. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, this is something we have to talk about. I mean, this has been going on for many years, actually, with people believing that because a person has popularity and that they are an entertainer, that they're somehow smarter, they've got it figured out, they make more money, they're more intelligent. No, they're just lucky. They're lucky, and the landscape tolerates minstrelsy because minstrelsy pays. Well, minstrelsy has always paid, actually. Being a fool, a licensed fool, pays quite well. And for some reason, black folk, some do not perceive themselves worthy. Sergio Mims, friend of the show.
Okay,
yes.
You went out for a second. You went out. Continue.
Okay. Now, what I was saying is, Sergio Mims, our friend from Chi-Town, he's a classical music enthusiast. There are black folk that are in the classical musical genre, perform the music, and yet we don't perceive ourselves to be a part of it. We don't perceive ourselves to be worthy of an expanded palette. We should be able to be seen in science fiction, in jazz, black, pardon me, not even black rock. I'm using black rock really for marketing terms, but in rock, in as doctors, lawyers, radio show hosts, conservatives, scientists, we have to be seen in every facet of society. And yet, we are being held captive to the minstrels. And somehow, someone as educated as Don Lemon, he's falling in line with what is popular or what is a public, what the public thinks, what the people are saying. The people say, or I shouldn't even say this. I'm going to even be more forthright, Captain. Maybe I've gone into this talk before. There's Blackie, there's Whitey, there's Brownie. What am I talking about? Blackie is the stereotypical thought process of some black folk. So when I go into a rant about, well, Blackie this, Blackie that, that's really me saying that's a stereotypical black political viewpoint. That's what you're supposed to think. Well, you know, these kids out here, you know, they're really smart. They're smarter than you think. No, they're not. Many of them are failing. You look at the statistics. You look at the graduation rates. We're not doing the damn thing. No, we're not. But you will go to a barbershop or a beauty salon, and Blackie, Captain, the not black people, not educated blacks, but a certain type of black mindset will tell you, oh, no, black, these kids, they're really swift. They're doing well. No, they're not. Well, we got to go and get these rappers. We got to get Lil Wayne on board. No, you don't. Lil Wayne disrespected Emmett Till in a sexually laced lyric. That is who you're going to go to for some kind of civil rights moment. I don't think so. It doesn't even sound right. It sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. I'm going to go to Q-Storm. He says, this is in the chat room, folks. He says, I think you might be reading too much into this, D-Bert. I think he was just trying to make the point that contemporaries need to get involved, and he just threw out names. I don't think he honestly meant that those entertainers were going to take up the mantle. Listen, I perceive that when someone says what they say what they mean. We haven't gotten to the point where we could actually read minds, Q-Storm. He put out these names, just like Jamie Foxx put out those names. Those are the folks that have the mic at the moment. And it is unfortunate that our contemporaries are who they are at this present day. But there's a matter of fact, there's a problem within that, because the industry is a minstrel industry. At some point during the civil rights movement, we had a better look. You had a middle-class aesthetic. You had middle-class empowerment. You had black folks that were very keen on presentation. They were not going to allow a minstrel aesthetic to be the voice of the black community. It was very orchestrated back then, and for a reason. Heck, if you want to be truthful about it, you know what, Captain? Maybe I'm going too deep into this thing. Let me not misspeak. We only got about 2 minutes, and I don't want to go into. I'm going to go into this heavy rant, Captain. Your thoughts, Galaxy? I'm about to go into this whole thing about if you go into the 50s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, you had people who were put in place on purpose from a black middle class elite just for representation.
This is true.
And we can look at it now and folks will say, oh, that's elitist. But you know what? It worked. And it might not have worked a different way. It might not have gone a different way. Because black folks were more conscious about perception than they are now, I think. I really do. What are your thoughts, Captain? We got about a minute and a half.
Well, let's see what he does, you know, day in and day out over there. Let's see what's going on, you know. I don't really have, I'm not going to hold, you know, as they would say, as some people would say, a heavy heart towards him as of yet. Give him a chance, give him, let him do his thing, and let's see what he comes back with. We're watching you. Our eyes are watching you. I see you, Don Lemon. We're watching you go. That's all. That's all. Give him his chance.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say Rosa Parks. You know, she wasn't the first person to not want to get up from that seat. There was another person that I think was given due as of late who might have been her predecessor. But she was a pregnant single mother, and the middle-class black elite establishment said, no, 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 we're not going to have her be the rep. We're going to have this seamstress, this middle-class seamstress, as the representative. That's the way it went down. Now, some folks would say that's being dishonest. No, that's being shrewd. That's being aware of perception. I'm just saying. I would assume that some would probably have a problem with that. I do not. I do not. I think that it works, Captain. All right, folks. As always, we definitely dig doing the show. We'll do it again on Wednesday. We took a break last Wednesday. It's been real. Let's get to the Mighty Fine. The Mighty Fine, Ready to Roar. See you on Wednesday.